This episode is brought to you by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's why you might want to check out State Farm Small Business Insurance. Why? Because State Farm agents are small business owners too, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
This is Recode Media with Peter Kafka. That is me. And today I'm talking to Hassan Piker. And he is one of those people that if you know who he is, you know he's a giant star in the world of Twitch and streaming and lefty politics. And there's a lot of you, maybe even like myself, who may not be that familiar with him. So he's going to introduce himself and we're going to go from there. Hey, Hassan, how are you?
What's going on? Hi.
Thank you for joining me. What's the best way to describe what it is that you do for a living?
I'm an internet himbo. That's what I do. I'm a professional himbo on the internet. No, I'm a left-wing political commentator, mostly on Twitch and YouTube. That's what I do.
So left-wing political commentator, we're familiar with what that person might look like, what they might do. On Twitch and on YouTube, not so much. It does not seem to be a place where folks like yourself thrive. How'd you get there?
Well, I have always played video games, so I'm very familiar with the like gaming culture and gaming audience. So I wanted to go to a space where I could cultivate an audience for myself and cultivate a community where I could speak to people on political issues and show a different side of the left that unfortunately doesn't get much coverage anywhere, really. That we can have fun. Because a lot of people just assume that when you say you're leftist or you're liberal, especially in these sorts of circles that tend to have a reactionary slant, that invokes the image of someone who is a, how should I put it, a care lord or a woke lord, someone who is not interested in having fun, mm-hmm. someone who is unable to have fun. You know, everything could be perceived as offensive or whatnot. And I think that's it's not a real way to depict leftist and liberal people in general. So I wanted to showcase that somewhere by being myself.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about your career path and how you got there. But let's talk about a little bit about what it is that you do. So Twitch is sort of your preferred, your main platform. Is that right? You said Twitch and YouTube, but I think
yes.
Twitch is sort of what you're best known for. So I think people who listen to this show know broadly what Twitch is. It's live streaming, that it's gaming centric. There's a lot of interest by Amazon, who owns Twitch, into expanding it to other stuff. But like you said, it's I think your audience probably are gaming or gaming related people. So what are you doing on an average Twitch stream? What does that look like?
So an average Twitch stream of mine starts off with political commentary, top news stories of the day. Take a look at it, offer my perspective on these issues that I think are important.
And you're kind of doing it live in the moment, right? You've got CNN up,
yeah.
or you've got the Bloomberg interview going, and you're kind of
yeah.
reacting to that stuff, or a YouTube clip of something that someone's recorded.
Yeah, usually, or an article. And I you know, pick some of the top stories ahead of time, figure out like what angle I'm going to cover it on, what I'm going to talk about. Oftentimes there's like additional information, like background information and whatnot that I might need. So I'll do a little bit further reading before I cover it. But yeah, this is all live. It's an entirely live production.
And then I can see there's people commenting and interacting with you
yeah.
while it's all going. It's kind of, if you're not used to looking at it, it's busy. Yeah, there's a lot going on the screen.
Yeah. But I think for Zoomers and for a younger audience, they like that. It's like the colorful slot machine of, you know, news media, I guess. They enjoy that back and forth interaction. They write stuff in the chat about like whether they know someone that's conservative or someone they know in their family is a conservative, and they've come to them with like talking points in regards to this particular subject matter. And they'll be like, what do you say to someone who is telling me that, you know, vaccines are causing them to turn into magnets, like human magnets? So there's this back and forth interaction that's constant. Yeah.
So it's kind of a free for all. It's kind of like an AM radio talk show, except there's really no call screener, right? It's just you talking and then deciding who you want to interact with. People are, they're not talking. You're not having a conversation with anyone in particular. They're sort of dropping notes into the chat.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And how long does an average stream go on for?
The average stream goes on for, I mean, everyone does it differently, but for me, I would say 8 to 10 hours. Last year, my average was 10 hours every single day. I streamed, I was on from 11 a.m. Pacific for the next 10 hours on average every single day.
So you're in a chair 10 hours a day, I assume 5 days a week. I assume you get a break on the weekends.
No, I do not. I keep streaming. No, I stream 7 days a week. Yeah.
That's not sustainable. How are you going to do that?
I love what I do. I enjoy it. So that's how I get to do it. I don't see it as work. Like, this is fun stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is fun. I get to do a podcast and that's fun. But like, even this comes. Wait, I'm sorry. Mom, can you please close my door? I mean, what are you doing? Like, I'm sorry. This has never happened before in the history of like me doing podcasts.
It's
my
great.
Mom knows. My mom knows that, like, you know, when I'm doing a podcast or something, like, I don't know why she
decided
to keep the door open.
I got the same problem with my kids, so I hear you.
Okay. She's good now. I texted her like 3 times. I was like, Mom, please close the door. Please close the door. There's helicopters flying around. Like, I can't hear. All right. Well, thank you, Mom. This is good.
See, a year ago, this might have been novel, but everyone now has the work from home experience. So they're all fully familiar.
I know. Well, I mean, no, I've always worked from home. The only difference is that during COVID, I wanted my mom to come live with me. And it's been a wonderful experience, wonderful across the board. But sometimes it gets a little crazy in here, you know, whenever I'm doing one of these things.
So back to sort of just the mechanics of how you do this. This is, you got your mom back there, but she's not helping out. This is, there's no one helping you. There's no one screening calls. There's no producer here. It's you and a microphone and a camera.
Well, yes and no. So the thing is, it's all about my community. It's a constant back and forth. So there's a constant flow of information coming in from the chat as well. There's like community members that have been around for a long time, subscribers. And I get to know them they're still technically anonymous, but I get to know more about them. Like, I know some of the community members by like their backgrounds. And so there's always a back and forth, and they're providing feedback. They're cracking jokes. They're sending stories. They want like localized news coverage on, you know, issues from time to time. So to say that like I do it on my own would be false. Mm-hmm. I definitely do it with my community. It's a collaborative process.
We had Dr. Lupo on last year, the gamer, and I can
love him. He's great.
I can get how that kind of content works, because he's playing a game. While he's playing a game, he's talking. So the visual stimulus, if you want to watch him play Fortnite or Call of Duty or whatever, that's there. People are into that. It seems like doing what you do, where you're literally talking about Bernie Sanders, maybe there's a clip of Bernie Sanders, but that's kind of it, is a more difficult way to engage the audience, to keep them watching. How many folks are watching you on a given day?
I mean, that number can vary depending on like if there's a big story happening that everyone wants to tune into and pay attention to. But right now, my average, I would say, is around 40,000 live concurrent viewers over the course of 10 hours. 8 hours.
And then if you total that up over a week, over a month, how many folks are checking in from time to time?
Oh, I have no idea what like the raw data of that. I mean, I could just pull it up right now, actually, but I truly don't know what the number would be. I guess last stream I did yesterday, I had 860,254 live viewers. So that's how many people like tuned in over the course of 10 hours.
And that was you responding that there was some gaming news, right? You were responding to E3.
No, not at all. That was just the regular stream. That was actually
stream.
Lower than usual, because I was playing video games. I usually get much higher. I get much higher viewership when I'm doing like coverage of a live event. When I covered the Israeli-Palestinian round, like the last round of conflict, there was there was a lot more people tuning in.
So in the same way that, you know, CNN or MSNBC or Fox is yeah. often news driven, same for your audience. Who is yeah. your audience? Are they the people who are hanging out on Twitch and consuming gaming content and then flicking over to you, or are they coming just for you?
It's a bit of both. I certainly have the people that are exclusively interested in, you know, news and covering and my coverage over particular issues. Then there's people who are, on Twitch, watching other Twitch streamers, but then tune in for my morning news coverage, maybe. And then they move on elsewhere or they go somewhere else. That's what it feels like.
So we both alluded to this, that there aren't a lot of lefty people in live streaming and YouTube, that and you can trace it even back to, like, you know, formats like talk radio. Like, there have, you know, the Rush Limbaughs of the world, there's never been a counter to them, and attempts to sort of create a counter to them don't work. Why do you think that either there are so few people on the left side of the spectrum doing stuff like you do, or why do you think that conservatives and reactionaries sort of dominated? I guess the same question.
Well, I think the most important reason for that is because of capital. A lot of leftists or even progressives who are capitalists themselves, but not anti-capitalists, for example, still criticize money's power in politics and the accumulation of wealth at the top. So that makes it very difficult under a capitalist organization of the economy to create a bunch of different media projects in the same way that there's an endless flow of cash to right-wing reactionaries from billionaires, millionaires, think tanks. So, because they don't criticize those people. As a matter of fact, they serve a specific purpose. And that purpose is to shift the attention away for average Americans, shift the attention away from those who control the system, those who, you know, write the legislation on behalf of the American citizens, oftentimes against the interests of the average American citizen. And they do a really good job at that. So that's why they get an endless sea of cash. And that makes it a lot more difficult. Like, leftist content creators have to be grassroots.
You think they're being propped up for reasons, for non-commercial reasons? I would assume that the reason that people are advertising on Fox News or Rush Limbaugh or a Steven Crowder show or buying Steven Crowder merch is that they like the stuff. Either the audience likes the stuff and or the advertiser wants to be in front of that audience. And they're apolitical.
No, I'm saying that the reason why there aren't that many leftist content creators is because the original starting point still requires a little bit of capital. It's not mm-hmm. easy to just, like, casually start streaming. You know what I mean? It still requires an investment. You need to have time. You need to have a lot of energy to be able to do this. And most people don't have that. They're not as fortunate as I was. And also on top of that, they don't have, like, backers. You know what I mean? I mean, Jeffrey Epstein personally invested like $65,000 into some random, like, French Canadian race realist in his YouTube channel. You know, he's just like, these guys are constantly on the hunt for content creators that are right wing. And it's a propaganda machine that works very effectively. We still don't know who funds the Federalist, for example. Think about that. I mean, these are right. jobs programs for wealthy fail sons who went to, you know, liberal arts institutions, who then turn around and either get a job at the Manhattan Institute, or if they can't do that, then they turn around and they criticize, you know, arts majors for a living. And they get paid handsomely for it.
So if we stipulate that it's easier to get your start as an angry conservative in media, and I'm not sure that's yeah. true, but in the end, you still have to have an audience. You have to compel an audience. You have to figure out how to make that audience respond to you. Is there something about that kind of politics that makes it easier to draw an audience than someone who does something like you do? And we should
yes
say that
no.
you came out of the Young Turks, which your uncle runs.
Yeah.
We've had Shank on before. I'm just wondering, and I'm not the first person to ask this question, right? Is there something about liberalism, left-leaning politics that makes it harder to engage an audience?
Yes and no. So what I wanted to hyper-focus on once again is how much the right-wing media machine actually looks for new talent and how gatekeepy the liberal side of the spectrum is. And there is no leftist in that equation regardless. Like, the most left-leaning anchors in mainstream media happen to be Chris Hayes, who is still, you know, at most a social Democrat. And you see outlets like Vox that are further to the left than what you would normally see, mm-hmm. like a CNN or an MSNBC, certainly. And even then, it's still mostly just social Democrats. Think about it this way. I think it was 3 years ago at this point. My memory is like a little cloudy. But I debated Charlie Kirk at Politicon. We were seen as peers at the time. We had similar levels of influence in our own circles. Obama was president at the time. I was not invited to the White House. Obama does not know who I am, will never know who I am. I will never be propped up by any sort of liberal establishment. I will never be propped up by or legitimized by the Democratic Party. Whereas on the other side, you have Charlie Kirk, who got an incredible amount of money and did not really have an audience, but kept pumping up their views. As we found out, I think Vox has even done some coverage on this on TPUSA, Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk's 501c3 that was literally targeting like 70-year-olds, but their entire, the organization's like entire purpose is supposedly changing the minds of young people, but they were weirdly just only advertising to 70-year-olds on Facebook for some reason,
mm-hmm.
because they want to make those people feel like they're successfully targeting the young people. So that's a perfect example, though. Like, I had to build my own brand and build my own audience and my community completely from the ground up with very little support from, you know, any sort of like party machine or any sort of media conglomerate, whereas Charlie Kirk was on Fox News every weekend, built his brand, built his organization, was able to take millions and millions of dollars from wealthy donors, and became a staple in the young Republican, as a young Republican conservative commentator in the Republican Party. And Donald Trump came to his events, and you know, they were on a first name basis. Yeah. Like, that's crazy to me.
I'm wondering how much of this is sort of scrambled by Trump and the Trump era and Trump's willingness to invite anyone, right? The most odious people in the world, to just ones that are merely distasteful. If they said something nice about him, he would endorse them, right? And so you had really extreme people showing up in the White House, and Donald Trump probably had no idea who they were. He just knew that they said something nice about him. You know, all the way to the end of the campaign, where he's bringing up random rappers who he doesn't identify. He has no idea.
Certainly. But Charlie Kirk was in the Republican media machine before Donald Trump mm-hmm. even became president. As a matter of fact, he was anti-Donald Trump originally until, you know, he realized Donald Trump is winning. And what I mean by that is, like, the conservative machine is so good at, like, picking young talent and then uplifting them and turning them into brands, like, making online influencers into, like, legitimate household names, I guess, as best as household names can be. And what I mean by that is, like, Charlie Kirk got notoriety because he wrote an essay in high school about how, like, potentially a woman of color took his slot when he was supposed to go to West Point. There is no evidence of this whatsoever. He just, like, made it up, wrote this article, this essay. That essay was published on Breitbart, and immediately Fox News was, like, calling him up to have him on national television.
The standard,
like, they seek this stuff out.
The standard conservative response to all this is, what are you talking about? We're the outsiders. We don't control Hollywood. We don't control TV. Fox News exists as a counterpoint to MSNBC and CNN all the way down. I think it is disingenuous. On the other hand, I think there's a big group of them who do believe it. And they do, you know, they'll look at success of a Jon Stewart or someone like that and say, well, see, you have there. This exists on both sides of the spectrum, but it doesn't feel right to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the Andrew Breitbart sentiment of politics downstream of culture. Like, these guys are culture obsessed because, unfortunately, American politics is very right wing. We are center right by most metrics, with the exception of, like, social issues. We are definitely more progressive than even some other comparable OECD nations when it comes to, like, trans rights and things like that, even though Republicans want to stop that as well. But ultimately, when it comes to the material realities that we subject the average American to, America is incredibly reactionary. I would even say violent with the way that we treat poor people and with the way that we eradicate whatever semblance of a middle class that we even had. We don't have a robust social safety net. We don't have healthcare. We don't have anything for the average American. And that, to me, is inherently very right-wing. And the media reflects that reality as well. So that's why Republicans are constantly complaining about the culture, because that's the one area that they haven't been able to get like a stronghold. And that's partially because they're just, it's whack. Like, they're just really bad. They're not very entertaining. Most Republicans make stuff that other Republicans watch because they agree with them, not necessarily because they're like entertained by it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. So do you want your audience to be entertained? Do you want them to mobilize and do something? Do you want to reach more people than you're reaching and aggregate more eyeballs? What's your plan?
Certainly. I would like to grow my audience. Mm-hmm. I want to mobilize them. I do mobilize them from time to time. And my first and foremost, my primary concern is informing people, as many people as possible, while also entertaining them. I want to educate people, but I will also do it in an entertaining way. And I think I've done a pretty decent job at that so far.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Hassan Abi.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You've heard it before. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. But it's more than just a tagline. Because State Farm agents are small business owners themselves who live and work in your community. And if you're in the market for small business insurance, who better to work with than an agent who understands what it takes? State Farm agents can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. Talk to your local State Farm agent today about small business insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we're back. There were a lot of people who a lot is the wrong word, but several prominent examples of people who on the left who were able to gather an audience, in some case build a business during the Trump years. You know, I'm thinking of people like Crooked Media, the guys behind Pod Save America, mm-hmm. or someone like Sarah Cooper, who's, you know, not explicitly political, but made her name parroting Trump. What does the post-Trump world look like for you? Has your audience stayed the same? Has it gone down, gone up? And how do you think about...
No, it's gone up.
So why do you think that is? Because you definitely hear from especially established media as well that some of the, you know, subscriber and reader interest they had is declined now that Trump is both out of office and quiet.
Because I'm not just a political commentator, and that's the reason. I am an influencer. I play video games. I watch murder mysteries with my audience. There isn't that much content out there to consume from an obvious like leftist perspective, where you can just like sit there and it's not just Marxist theory, but it's I'm not constantly just talking about dialectical materialism, but you can tell that my worldview is on that side, and it reflects in all of my analysis, which I think comes across as a unique approach to most issues, because most people have never heard of this perspective or have ever seen it beyond what they maybe learn in a negative way in college, if they ever even broach the subject beyond like communism is bad and terrible and it's the same as fascism. So I think that's a novel approach for a lot of people. And then also for people who already have that worldview, I'm one of the very few places that they can actually, you know, consume content from that point of view that's still entertaining.
It's interesting to hear you describe yourself as an influencer, right? Because the standard stereotype is usually a woman, maybe not always a woman, but someone who's selling a lifestyle
brand. I don't know about
brand.
The woman part, but...
Yeah, I guess I think of the people dancing on TikTok, right? It's sort of the snapshot.
That was
right
a very
now.
Boomer take, Peter.
Well,
I'm going to be honest with you.
Well, I know some boomers. I guess I'm wondering whether you ever feel like you need to diversify your content, if you need to say, look, I'm giving them too much Marxist theory here. I've got to spend more time being entertaining, or maybe go the other way.
If anything, I will usually go the other way, where I'm like, I'm not doing enough, not just Marxist theory, but like, I'm not doing enough political coverage or enough reporting. But I like to have fun. And I'm doing everything that I enjoy doing for the most part. And it just happens to make me successful. And it happens to appeal to a lot of people. I'm very fortunate. I don't think about it from the point of view of like, I need to, you know, increase the politics dial by 25%. It's like some days there's a lot of news and I want to get through a lot of the news stories. Other days, I just want to have fun and, you know, not really hyper-focus on the news. And I just go with the flow.
What's your relationship with Twitch, owned by Amazon, run by the world's richest man? What's that relationship like?
It's interestingly not very contentious. Twitch has been pretty good to me.
They suspended you a couple times, right?
They have. They used to suspend me all the time. I used to get suspended all the time. But no, Twitch has been pretty good. Part of the reason why they suspended me is something that I even defend myself, which is the terms of service that they have. They are very, very careful about their terms of service for the most part. They will immediately suspend you if you do anything that is reported.
What's something that got you in trouble in the past?
I got in trouble for a frame, like a 1 second frame from Bowling for Columbine.
The Michael Moore movie.
Yeah, the Michael Moore documentary movie where I wasn't even talking about like mass shootings or anything. Actually, I was talking about Latin America and our like American imperialism in South America and destabilization. And I think it was like maybe the El Mozote massacre or something. I don't even recall what the exact one was, but there was like one brief snippet from a documentary that's shown to eighth graders that had like actual gore in it. Like they showed dead bodies.
So you put you threw a still of that up on your stream.
But I didn't throw a still. It was in the snippet that I was watching.
And it was from. Just to be clear, it was saying this is content that's objectionable. We don't want it on, not because you're violating a copyright by showing someone else's movie.
Yes. Yeah. No, it was straight up because they consider that to be a violation of the terms of service because it was gore.
And there was another one where you basically had some equivalent of like a chickens coming home to roost thing about 9/11.
Yes.
Which I've read about.
That was the other one. Yeah. That was the biggest.
So it's happened a few times, but you've sort of figured out how to not trip those wires anymore and can stay on without being taken down.
Yeah. For the most part. I mean, I think like they know that I'm one of the largest content creators on the platform. They know that I mean well. I am not interested in like violating the terms of service. I'm very careful on top of that as well. So I haven't been banned since that big one.
And do you feel any conflict about doing what you do on Amazon, run by Jeff Bezos, who is often now a subject of criticism?
No. It is virtually impossible to operate outside of, it's virtually impossible, if not completely impossible, to operate outside of capitalism, like in order to criticize it. It comes across as hypocritical to someone who's like, well, who's never really put a lot of thought or consideration into it. And it's certainly something that people tell me all the time. You're like, dude, oh, really? Like you criticize Amazon. And yet here you are on Jeff Bezos' platform making him richer. It's like, yeah, I mean, your bosses suck. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, you know, do you like your boss? Do you think your boss is like an honest person? Do you? Maybe some of them are, but ultimately, like, there's nothing we can do. We have to work on these platforms. It would be very difficult, if not completely impossible, to avoid Amazon, especially when you think about their cloud computing or like their cloud service and their. I mean, AWS is what 40% of the entire internet. So good luck avoiding Amazon. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Luckily, they don't suspend me for criticizing Amazon's like horrific labor practices, which I do regularly.
So you are a young person who's been doing this out of college. How old are you?
I'm 29 years old.
29. Okay, so you're getting up there. How long can you sit in a chair for 8 to 10 hours a day and talk nonstop? How sustainable is this?
I don't know. I mean, Rush Limbaugh did it literally until he died. So
he did 5 days and he didn't do 8 hours, right? He did 3 and he had a team.
But, you know, I enjoy it. The moment it's not, you know, the moment I stop enjoying it is the moment I'll cut back on it, you know, and I do other stuff too. Like now that COVID is kind of tackled here in the United States, 64% of adults have at least their first shot, you know, congratulations to us. I want to do more outside stuff. I want to go outside and, you know, do some coverage on the streets as well. Something I always wanted to do and something I did a little bit, but unfortunately that was hindered by COVID for the past year.
So live on the street.
Yeah.
You're going to need to hire somebody to hold a mic for you, I think.
Yeah, no, nope, that's not how that works either. I strap a bag onto myself and I go out in the streets and do it all on my own. But I also have friends who are content creators who come with me as well.
Do you have any interaction with the LA influencer world that we periodically read and write about when someone acts badly because they, you know, someone got drunk?
Yeah.
And do you interact with those folks?
Yeah, of course.
And like in what way are you interacting them in real life or you're making videos about their videos?
No, I interact with them in real life too. I have friends who are influencers. I know people from being in the same circles. I've grown alongside some of these other content creators as well. And, you know, I still maintain relationships and friendships with them. None of them are like, quote unquote, bad though. They're actually pretty chill. And none of them usually ever get into trouble.
Yeah, comes up every time I bring on someone who does what you do or we talk about this topic, that it seems like there's a lot of money in that world. There's a lot of reasons for people to participate in it. But unlike traditional media, there are less gatekeepers and also less sort of guardrails. There's less likely to have a manager, or at least a manager knows what they're doing, or someone to say, hey, don't do that. Don't go on camera when you're drunk or any of that, or maybe take a break.
Yeah.
Do you see this ever sort of, I mean, it doesn't seem, I just said sustainable three or four times in this interview. Do you see some way where the work that you do and others do gets more rational and sort of, I don't know, supervised is the wrong word?
You want more capital owner participation? Like you want other managers
larger
entities to come in and maybe?
No, because it's not the regulating. It's providing, it's instead of saying it's free, it's Darwinian capitalism. Go do what you do. And if you succeed, great. And we'll have you do more of it. That there isn't sort of any, I'm a little worried about the people who make this stuff, that they are on a content wheel and there's not a lot of guardrails.
Oh, for sure. But every part of entertainment is like extremely exploitative. And so is this kind of content as well. The only difference is that there's a fairer profit share here because you're not like going through an entire record label, for example, and getting a 360 deal, which will inevitably change, by the way, because as you and I both know, when there's more money to be made in this industry, there are going to be more professional handlers that come in, which has already happened. A lot of esports organizations are popping up left and right, and they're making a lot of money, and they're run by some wonderful people. I know some of them. And they get big sponsorships, big brand deals. So obviously that means they have to be more marketable and more brand friendly. And that's certainly one way that people will, continue to operate in the future. So I think that's what you mean, right? Like there are more traditional entertainment avenues or entertainment ventures that are getting invested and involved in the online space every single day.
Yeah. And I guess I'll just reiterate. I don't need big Hollywood or big media or whatever capital letters we want to use to come in and set terms. But right now you have this, it seems like you have a setup where the platforms are the ones who get most of the money. They don't really have any incentive or ability to sort of regulate anything about what goes on, except in extreme cases.
Or even want to.
Right. And so it's a free for all. And, you know, that cuts both ways is my big, deep thought.
Yeah. I mean, you're correct. The internet is, there's some real freaks on here. Okay. There used to be some real crazy content on these platforms. I mean, even Twitch, but it's cleaned up a lot in the past 4 to 5 years. It's certainly gotten a lot better since I've been on the platform.
Well, it's working for you. It's very nice to meet you. I hope my audience that doesn't know you gets to check you out. You should definitely check out the stream. There's a sort of visual language going on there that's really interesting, especially if you are an older person, maybe boomer adjacent like me. It's very cool. Hassan, nice to meet you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks again to Hassan for joining us. Thanks again to Hassan's mother for joining us as well. I think that's the first time this happened on the show. But, you know, we're working from home. These things happen. And it was delightful to have a little verite in our podcast. Thanks to Joel and Jelani, who edited and produced this show. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to you guys for listening. This is Recode Media. There will be another new free show next week. See you then.